This is DJ Shadow. It's definitely an honor to be here. Beats One, appreciate the opportunity. Since this is the first show, I thought it might be interesting to talk about the world of beats. Obviously, I come from hip-hop. Hip-hop is the music that raised me, the music of my life. And through hip-hop, I learned to appreciate and understand all other forms of music that existed prior to hip-hop. But there's been a lot of music since the inception of hip-hop. Within electronic music alone, there's been untold number of genres, new genres that have popped up, even in just the last 10 years. One of the main things that hip-hop taught me to do was to always look in unusual places, look for inspiration wherever you can find it. And for me recently, that's involved looking outside of traditional hip-hop towards other genres. And I guess the first time I ever found myself doing that was right around 1994, 1995, the very first time I heard drum and bass music coming out of a car in London. And I just stopped in my tracks. And I was like, what is that? I was just hearing amen breaks sped up and cut up in a way that I could have never imagined doing it in the traditional hip-hop way. And that's when I first realized that there was beat-making inspiration to be had outside of my traditional beloved hip-hop and rap realm. One of the aspects of hip-hop that I had fallen in love with was the hardness of the beats. The beats were harder than rock and roll. Something came along and, you know, I call it my public enemy feeling. I'm always trying to get that feeling in the music that I listen to. That's not to say that I don't appreciate, you know, classical music or spiritual jazz music or other genres where it isn't about the hardness of the kick and the snare. It's just that when it comes to making beats and contemporary music, that's kind of where my head's at. And that's why I never really gravitated toward certain types of electronic music through the 80s and 90s. Like, I was never really a big house guy for that reason. I kind of liked some acid house when it became a thing. But outside of that, and of course, electro and early Detroit techno, there wasn't really anything else to me that was competing with hip-hop's creativity and explosion of ideas throughout, you know, the late 80s, early 90s. And really, I mean, you know, all the way through the 90s and the early part of the 2000s, I still felt that same way. I was able to find what I needed, the nutrition, I guess you could call it, for making beats from direct descendants of the rap and hip-hop lines, such as Southern rap and the crunk sound, starting in the late 90s with groups like 3-6 Mafia. And then up through, you know, what eventually would kind of become the Lil Jon Charge. Houston rap had its thing. So there were still a lot of great ideas, and still are, within hip-hop. But what started to happen is that I was hearing, for the first time in what felt like decades, a menacing kind of street mentality coming back to some of the other genres within electronic music. I was first exposed to UK dubstep, kind of by accident actually. I stopped into some record stores in London, specialty shops, and just started listening to what other people were listening to, seeing what other people were buying. And I just started asking questions because I was really in London to be inspired. I was there feeling like I needed some other kind of energy, some other kind of input, creative pulse in the music that I was listening to be inspired. And I was directed to dubstep. So I'm bringing back all these 12 inches, and then, you know, I kind of plowed my way through them, did what I wanted to do with them in DJ sets at the time, and went to the record store here in San Francisco, and happened to chance upon an album that was pretty influential to me, Neil Landstrom. To me, he was bringing something new to the table. There was a little bit of glitchiness to it, but there was definitely a hip-hop sensibility running throughout it. With some of the like video game noises and stuff, it just seemed to be a little more developed, a little more intense of a sound. So this is right around 2009, and I was just getting started working on a new album. And the first track that I sat down to make was, I guess, an amalgam of all of these new influences and love, obviously, for the hip-hop music that I grew up with. And it culminated in a track that I put out in 2010 as a free download called Death Surrounds Us.
Death surrounds us.
So I made that one track, and there was definitely a steep learning curve in the sense that it was quite different from most of the music I'd been known for making. And I didn't grow up as a club kid. I didn't grow up making electronic music. So building entire cohesive songs, tracks, beats, without relying on samples was a new thing for me. There were certain ambitions that I had for the album I was working on, but the album ended up taking quite a different direction. It ended up becoming insular, kind of withdrawn. And in order to complete it, I had to also withdraw from listening to a lot of contemporary new music that was coming out. But when I hit the road in the summer of 2010, I'm walking around festival sites and I'm listening to the music that other DJs are playing. And I'm hearing something emerging, something new. The technology and the engineering ability of my peers was reaching an entirely new level. And then I heard two tracks that basically blew my brain.
Signal and shut it off. As you live everything, let me show you.
Everything I loved about hip-hop. It was noise, it was grit, it was dirt, it was attitude, it was the biggest bully on the block. And yet, it wasn't hip-hop, it wasn't rap, it didn't come from my world. It was music I didn't know how to make. I had no idea how they were achieving these sounds, achieving this volume, this heaviness. It was an entirely new vocabulary. To me, when I hear music that challenges my entire paradigm of everything that I know and understand about what I value in music, how it's being made, it's like a bell that can't be unrung. The question is, how are you going to respond? Now, obviously, I don't think that means that you rip up the entire rule book and start over again or change your identity or try to be anyone else. To me, you just add a little bit of piece of this knowledge to your tool bag, and it's something that's there that you can pull out, use, learn from at any given time, whether it's in the studio or in a club when you're DJing, whatever. To me, these kind of lessons are invaluable, and you have to stay in class. You have to learn. You have to have an open mind to be able to receive this information and know what to do with it. Valuable as all this was to me, I knew that I wasn't going to, you know, switch up and become a dubstep DJ or dubstep artist. And then I heard another track that had a very similar effect on me in terms of making me just stop and listen and go, this is the future. This is exactly what I want to align with. And I asked my friend who was next to me in the club the first time I heard it, I said, what is this? Who is this? And he said, oh, that's the homie Hudson Mohawk. My way of thinking, this was the perfect minimal response to dubstep. Just a handful of elements doing weird things, utterly bare bones, but still hard as nails. As fate would have it, I ended up connecting with Hudmo on several occasions.
Insight, foresight, more sight. The clock on the wall reads a quarter past midnight.
Think about it and understand it. Do understand.
Now.
So the last album came out in 2011, and then I toured for it until April 28th, 2012. Suddenly I was off the road for the first time in several years, had a bit of time on my hands, thought I was going to have an uneventful summer. But then I was asked by Low End Theory, the legendary night in LA, to put together a DJ set. And armed with all these new inspirations that I wasn't able to do anything with on the prior record or the tour, I felt like I was ready to put together a set that represented not only my values as a long-time, long-term recording artist and DJ, but also as somebody who loves contemporary music and feels a responsibility to support it. Did it. It was great fun. A promoter was in the crowd, asked me to do his thing. Several promoters were at that show, asked me to do their thing, and then it ended up just kind of taking on a life of its own. For me, one of the highlights was dropping this DJ Pound track at a venue called Red Rocks in Colorado, opening up for like a large-scale EDM artist, and just seeing thousands and thousands of kids blown away by this track that I'm sure they had no idea what it was, who it was. And in fact, the artist I opened up for after the show was like, "What is this track?" And then he held up his phone and was playing it. He recorded it from the audience. The whole concept for the DJ sets I was doing at this time was to limit myself to only the songs that had come out that month. So if it was, you know, March 2012 or April 2013, I was trying to play tracks that were just from that month, if possible. And so that meant listening to a ton of music to pick the tracks that I wanted to play, make sure I was representing myself and my sensibilities in the song selection. And in doing so, I just spent a ton of time on the internet looking for things, downloading things, listening to things. And I started to become fascinated with a label from Germany called Saturate. And I just assumed that all the artists were either German or possibly European. I didn't know where they were from. It didn't really matter, obviously, but that was my assumption. And then slowly I started to realize that a lot of the artists I was playing were actually from California, and not only from California, but the Bay Area where I live. And that struck me as being a little bit more than a coincidence. I was playing this Bleep Bloop track at a bass rave in Northern California, and I came off stage and was surprised to hear somebody say, "Hey, you just played my track."